Hey, Radicals. I'm back today with part two of the saga that was my marriage and my divorce. I've changed the names of the characters to respect and protect the identity of those involved. And even though some parts of the story are messy, I know that they are necessary to share. So we're picking up where we left off with part one just a couple episodes ago, in the wake of Desi and Sam's relationship. Those ashes is where Sam and I began. Sam and I had undeniable chemistry and attraction, but there was also an element of combustion. Both Sam and I had been through toxic and abusive relationships. I also think that both of us had a lot of childhood wounding. We both were trying to find healing, and I think on some level, we were trying to save each other. Our relationship began in secret. At the time, I was working for a Christian theater company and also leading a small group at a megachurch. My social media presence was carefully curated and private because I wanted to keep a good image. I wanted to be a squeaky clean teacher, and I also wanted to be a good Christian role model. And even though I in my heart believed that God made no mistakes, He makes everyone perfect just the way they are, I knew that the church leaders and the leaders of this organization, the theater organization, I knew that they wouldn't support me or my relationship with Sam. None of Sam's friends were supportive because they were also friends with Desi. We couldn't go to the karaoke bar anymore because that was a Desi zone. We did encounter her there a few times, and it ended in drama and fights. When I shared with Kelsey Ann about the new developments with Sam, she had her own reservations and was worried about me. Kelsey Ann had witnessed some of Sam and Desi's fights firsthand, and she knew how dark it was. Sam and I fell fast and hard, or at least I did. I was canceling on plans to go and spend time with her. I would leave friends' events early to go and spend time with her. I wasn't being a good friend to my friends during that time, and I thought it was totally justified because that's what happens when you're getting swept away, caught up in romance. But in reality, behind the scenes, that romance included Desi sending Sam lots of voicemails threatening to take her life. I could see Sam grieving this relationship and hurting over the end of it, while she was simultaneously trying to build a new relationship with me. But I wasn't coming out, and I wasn't loud and proud about my relationship with Sam, because internally I was still wrestling with whether or not this was what God intended for me. I had spent so much of my life and my childhood dreaming of the one, saving myself for marriage, and dreaming of my future husband. I spent a lot of time praying and talking to God, trying to decipher if this was what He wanted for me. And despite all the chaos, I do remember getting some breadcrumbs from Spirit at that time that still led me towards Sam, led me towards my own queer identity. Because as you know from other episodes, I also kissed my friends in childhood. I had kissed girls. And as a young adult, I was awakening to the truth that I must actually be bi. Kissing girls in my youth was just a loophole at the time because I didn't think that God would care if I kissed girls. I thought God only cares if I kiss a boy because I was saving myself for my future husband. The first 6 to 7 months of Sam's and my relationship were incredibly tumultuous. We got together, broke up, got together, broke up, more than once, more than twice. I think the first few times, it was me saying, I like you and I'm attracted to you, but I don't think that you're the one, and I don't think that we should pursue things because I don't want to hurt your heart. Down the line, she broke up with me at 2 a.m. via text message and then blocked my number. What I really found out was happening was that she was hooking up and back together with Desi. But she wanted to break it off with me beforehand so that it wouldn't be cheating. And Rachel today, the self-respect and the self-worth that I have today for myself, I wouldn't tolerate this kind of behavior now. But back then, this love felt like it was a movie, the drama, the ups and the downs. My nervous system was hooked because this love mirrored what love was like in my childhood. I had to work and strive to win my mother's affection. Sometimes I got it. Sometimes I didn't. Sometimes my mom would be chaotic and withholding. And so was Sam. She could be so sweet, sticky sweet, romancing me, charming my friends. Her and my mom got along really well. And the little girl within me was still alive, striving, wanting to be chosen, wanting to be picked, wanting desperately to be desired, to be loved. I painted so many red flags white because I wasn't able to identify the trauma and the abuse that I had grown up with yet. I was still living at home with my parents after graduating college. I couldn't see all of that yet. I didn't have enough distance. I tolerated and accepted the chaos because that's what I was used to, and that's what I knew love to be. My family was very accepting and very loving when I came out to them. My dad had a hard time at first, but eventually he came around. I knew that he had to grieve the life that he envisioned for me or the future that he envisioned for me in his own way. I understand that. The thing that really cracked him, though, was when my mom said to him, "Why do you care what happens in their bedroom? Why are you so fixated on what is in someone's pants?" And I know that sounds silly to say, but that's what my mom said to my dad. It kind of cracked him to go, yeah, why am I thinking about that? Why am I fixated on that? Why is that what's important to me? What really should be important to someone, right, is if their child is being loved, respected, cared for. I eventually went on to leave the church group. I left the theater company that I worked for. And then I came out online and I came out to my community. And I introduced Sam as my girlfriend instead of my best friend, which was the whole facade and charade that I had been keeping up. A lot of the Christians that I knew at the time wanted to appear supportive, wanted to lean in and ask me questions. I had a lot of Christian mentors or leaders that I looked up to at the time in my community reach out to me to go to coffee or lunch and such. And all of the conversations kind of went the same. The Christian person would ask me, "What Bible verses has God shown you that make you think that this relationship is okay? What Bible verses has God given you or put on your heart that make you think that this lifestyle is acceptable?" And the best that I could give people was Song of Solomon, chapter 3, verse 4, which is, "I have found the one whom my soul loves." Because when it came to the Bible, in my reality, my grandpa, who is a pastor, my mom, who was my Sunday school teacher, they both always taught me that the Bible should not be taken literally. The Bible is a metaphor. It's a story. The Bible was not written by God, it was written by man, and maybe inspired by God, but to me, the Bible is no different than other authors' channeled writings that exist today. I also totally know and believe that the Bible has changed and been translated and been edited to suit the narrative for whatever is happening in society at the time, and that is why I know that homosexuality wasn't even in the Bible until 1947. There is no Hebrew word for homosexuality. My relationship with God, goddess, spirit, divine, today, cannot be held in that book. My relationship with spirit is far greater and transcends that book. So when I met with these Christians and these different people in my life, I felt like I had to prove something to them. I felt like I had to convince something to them. my own feelings or my own knowledge of my body or my own desire or attraction, that wasn't enough. And so those conversations with some of my Christian friends, that was the last time I ever saw them. Some of my Christian friends came to my wedding because they wanted to look supportive, but I never heard from them again. Some of them came to the wedding, but they didn't give a wedding gift. So I was able to read between the lines. I'm thankful that I had the support of my family. And for the most part, I had the support of my friends, even though they might have had some reservations about Sam because they had seen the tumultuousness of our connection. My friends accepted me, and they loved me as I navigated loving and accepting myself. And I know that there are many other LGBTQIA people who do not have the same experience. And so I'm very thankful. And I'm very thankful for the journey that Sam and I went on because it all was necessary for me to come into myself and for me to step into my queer identity. And even though Sam wasn't the one, I know that she was the one at that time in my life. I know that I needed to get married and divorced to burst through some purity culture, religious trauma bonds that I really had in my life. And I'm thankful to her and I'm grateful for her and those parts of my story because without those things, I wouldn't be the Radically Rachel that I am today. Sam and I fought a lot. We both were Tauruses. We both were the oldest child. And we had a lot of things in common. We both were fiery, passionate, stubborn, bullheaded. We both had a hard time being wrong. We both always wanted to be right. And for me, growing up, fighting was a part of my nature. I fought with my mom. I fought with my sister. I fought with Kelsey Ann. I fought with Kylie. So naturally, I fought with Sam, too. We had a few notable fights during our engagement. Some of the fights were so bad that I knew I had the feeling I shouldn't send these save the dates. We had a big fight like 2 days before I was going to send the save the dates, and I thought I shouldn't send these. I should wait. But I didn't. They were already printed. They were already addressed. Months later, we had a major blowout before I was supposed to send the invitations, and I thought I shouldn't send these invitations. But the money had been spent. And Rachel Wilde isn't a quitter. I was too embarrassed and ashamed to postpone the wedding or call it off, even though I had said that to Sam a few times. I don't know if we should get married. I don't know if we're ready. We're fighting too much. We even went to premarital therapy. We were fighting in front of our therapist, and she asked us, "Are you guys here in therapy to work on these things, or are you here to decide if you should get married or not?" And we both were like, "We're getting married," because neither of us would have been able to fathom or live with the embarrassment or the shame or the failure of calling off the wedding. I'm now going to share with you a journal entry from 2016. Which is the year that I got married. February 14th, 2016. Sam ruined Valentine's Day, being an ass. Last night, she went on a rant about how if I tell people I'm bi, she will look like an idiot, and our marriage or relationship won't look legit. Which tells me she takes on the same lens as society, at which bi individuals are not seen as equals or legit in the relationship. Sam said that if I tell someone I'm bi, I'm basically saying I'm open to cheat. Like, WTF kind of bullshit is that? So then, I'm trying to explain how I need her love and acceptance for who God made me to be. And she keeps firing back about me telling people that I'm bi. I don't feel comfortable not being honest with myself and others about my past and who I am. The fight escalates to so much more, and I am most hurt and wounded by the fact that she was sarcastic and doesn't love and accept me for who I am. And that when I brought up how we need to talk about this at therapy, last night and today, she had a negative response, and that is a red flag to me. I tell her all this, choking back my tears, and I tell her that my heart is broken. And her response immediately is one of the victim, and she starts crying, screaming, running around the house. I feel as if she's doing this because I asked her to recite and explain and articulate what I am upset about, and she can't. So she just starts to freak out to take attention from the fact that she doesn't even know what I want her to be sorry for. So now it looks like I am so mean and I won't give her space, and she can cry and text her friends and blah blah, and then I just look like the worst person in the world. But I feel like she's just being a drama queen and is being manipulative. And this isn't the first time I have felt that she does this in a fight. I refuse to be with someone who will not accept me for who I am and who God created me to be. And I will not be with someone who will not appropriately and healthily approach therapy. That is a red flag. That was February. And a few months later, in June, I went to Electric Forest, the music festival, with my best friends. Sam couldn't get off work, so she wasn't able to come. And her family planned her wedding shower that weekend when I was going to be gone. She was upset that I wasn't going to be home for her shower, even though we were doing separate showers, and her family also planned this even though they knew I was going to be gone. And leading up to the music festival, Sam shared a lot of insecurity with me, at which she was worried I was going to hook up with my friends. She was worried I was going to hook up with Kelsey Ann and her boyfriend. She was worried that I was going to use drugs. And I didn't do either of those things at that music festival. But what I did do was cry every day because Sam kept texting me crazy things, insecure things. She would be mad if I didn't return her text right away. She didn't like the pictures I was posting on Snapchat. No matter what I did, she was determined to ruin that weekend and that experience for me. Now, mind you, when you're at a music festival, cell service is bad, and when you're camping, you can't always charge your phone, and so sometimes I wasn't able to respond, or sometimes I would try to send a text message and it wouldn't get to her for a few more hours later. Her mind was running wild with crazy thoughts of me cheating on her and hooking up with my friends. Sam had a lot of insecurity in our relationship, and that was a big part of our fights and our conflicts. Even though I had never cheated on anyone in my life, and in actuality, Sam was the one who cheated on me and cheated on people in her past, if I reminded her of that fact, she would flip out at me and tell me, "I knew you were going to hold this over my head. You said you forgave me." One time, I was texting a cousin of mine after my grandpa had passed, and we were both sharing stories about him. So the text messages were rather long. I was lying next to Sam in bed, and she began to freak out at me, wondering who I could be texting so late at night. If I wanted to go out for dinner or drinks with my sister, she would get upset, claiming that I was dressed up too pretty, or I must be trying to pick up guys or something. She was also very insecure about the fact that I had never had sex with a man. She was worried that we would get married and then I would want to, even though I was waiting for marriage and I didn't know what it was like, so how could I want anything different? In my own healing and therapy work, post that relationship, I understand that a lot of the conflicts we had led to reactionary abuse, that Sam would often say and do things that would put me in a corner, the way that she would speak to me, yell at me, make up all these stories and insecurities. For the first few years of our relationship, I was very understanding and very patient with her, and I would speak to her with empathy and compassion and affirm her. But after a few years of that, I began to yell and defend myself, and I would try to make myself bigger because she wasn't hearing my words. So I would swear or I would yell. I would get up close to her body to show her I wasn't afraid, and I would get chest to chest with her and we'd be fighting. One time I threw a hairbrush across the room. I slammed doors. I knocked boxes from our wedding shower gifts on the floor in anger. I'm not proud of these things, but it's the dark depths that this conflict brought me to. The month following Sam's wedding shower was my wedding shower. Even though I couldn't go to Sam's wedding shower, Sam had agreed to stop by mine. The night before, though, she got really drunk. So drunk that one of her friends brought her back home. She was so out of it and was so awful to me that I made her sleep in our second bedroom. She was saying horrific things to me, and I filmed her. The next morning, I wanted to show her these things, really because I wanted her to stop drinking, and I wanted her to acknowledge that she had a drinking problem. But I wasn't able to show her those videos or anything because she was so hungover, and she was in no shape to be able to come to my wedding shower. So the day of my wedding shower, I woke to that, and then had to go and put on a pretty dress and put on a smile and act like none of that was happening behind the scenes. Though I haven't talked about it yet on the podcast, growing up, my dad had a drinking problem, and my sister and I witnessed him drunk many times, fighting with my mom. We even would defend our mom and protect our mom when they were fighting. Alcoholism, drinking, fighting, all of it was so normal, so normalized to me since I was a little girl. I was just replaying out old patterns and cycles, trying to fix something with this woman, perhaps trying to fix something in essence in my relationship with my mom. But of course, I was completely misguided. I found a prayer that I wrote in this journal as well. Here's what my prayer said. God, hear my cry. Help me to overcome this darkness in my heart. You can transform anything from despair and pain. Why not my relationship? I need to let go of the pain and let God in my life. And at the top of the page, I wrote, I need to raise my expectation of what God can do in my life. Oh, sweet Rachel, she had no idea what God was doing in her life. Radicals, I hope you'll see and you'll understand the reason why I'm sharing these stories. I want to share with you the moments in my past where I wasn't my best self. I'm not proud of the Rachel that I was in that relationship. But I give myself grace and compassion now because that version of me was going through so much. And I was just doing the best that I could with the tools that I had at that time. And today, thankfully, I think with social media, there are so many more tools available than there were 10 years ago for me when I was going through this. So today, instead of affirmations, I'm going to close this episode out with a tool. This is a domestic abuse quiz, and maybe you or someone you know is in an abusive relationship. And maybe some of these questions will raise a red flag for you. And help is available 24/7 at the National Domestic Violence Hotline. You can call 800 888-799-7233, or you can text the word BEGIN to 88788 to get connected with someone for some support. I'll link those things in the show notes as well. And whether or not you're in a relationship, I think it would be helpful to still listen to these questions, that way that you can be a solid support if anyone in your community needs help or resources. Sometimes there are obvious signs that your partner is abusive. For example, if they are physically violent or make clear threats to harm you. However, some signs of abuse are more difficult to detect. If you are concerned that your partner's behavior is unhealthy or abusive, or if someone in your life is going through an unhealthy relationship, these questions might help. 1. Does your partner complain about your friends or family members, or make it difficult for you to see them? 2. Does your partner accuse you of things that aren't true? 3. Does your partner or someone close to you criticize you, put you down, or call you names? 4. Does your partner have a say in everything that you do? 5. Does your partner gaslight you, make you doubt yourself, or question your version of events? 6. Does your partner lie to you? 7. Does your partner threaten you, make you feel unsafe, hurt, or harm you? 8. Are you frightened of your partner, but only when they have been drinking or taking drugs? 9. Does your partner check up on you, monitor where you go, or make you check in with them? 10. Are you ever worried that your children are seeing or hearing things that they shouldn't be? 11. Has your partner ever threatened to take your children away, or said that they would refuse to let you take them with you or see them if you left? 12. Does your partner pressure you into sexual activity you do not want or that you feel uncomfortable about? 13. Has your partner ever taken money from you or withheld money? 14. Has your partner prevented you from continuing or starting a college course or from going to work? 15. Has your partner ever tried to control you by telling you that you could be deported because of your immigration status? 16. Does your partner, family members, or your community expect you to follow certain rules or there will be consequences? Some other indicators of an emotionally abusive relationship would be the feeling of constantly walking on eggshells to avoid upsetting someone, feeling criticized or belittled by someone, even for small things. Maybe this person tells you that no one else would ever want you. Maybe they ignore you or give you the silent treatment when you don't do what they want. Maybe they humiliate you in front of your friends or family. Maybe they get upset when a household task isn't done the way that they think it should be. If you answered yes to any of these questions, or perhaps more than just a few of these questions, I want you to know you're not alone. I've been where you are. And I'm thankful that now I'm on the other side of that relationship. but it wasn't easy getting out. I had to start respecting myself. I had to start believing that the universe, that God, would want better for me. I wasn't being loved the way that I know the universe would want me to be loved. I also know that my relationship was not making me the best version of myself. I felt so dark and so far from the light. And radicals, if you're in darkness or going through a toxic relationship like this, I urge you to tell someone, talk to a friend, talk to a family member, seek out therapy or a coach, whatever you can do. When I was going through this, I didn't reach out to anyone and I didn't tell anyone. Partly because I didn't want my friends and my family to think worse of Sam, but also because anyone that I knew that was Christian or religious, I felt like they would just tell me, well, I told you so, or that they would say that my relationship was not blessed by God. I felt incredibly alone. And it was in these dark times that I really did begin to call on my spirit guide. I began to ask God with open palms, work in my life. Help me. Show me where to go. Show me what to do. And sweet listener, sweet star, wherever you are, if you need help, if you need resources, check out my show notes. I'm going to link some things there, and I hope that those things could be the first stepping stone for you to move in a different direction. I love you. Thank you for joining me today.